Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back to Old Millennials, a deep dive on shallow topics from the late 90s and early 2000s. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Emily.
And I'm Margot.
Yay. Well, today we have a really exciting topic. Well, all our topics are exciting, but I think this one is perfect for our time of year, as it is the time we would normally be getting ready to go back to school shopping, which was a pretty big deal back in the day.
Yeah, I think we landed on back to school as the framework for this episode so that we could talk about stores and also catalogs that we ordered a lot of our favorite clothes from.
Yeah, I remember very, like, early on we would talk, of course, about Delia's, but then we started thinking of some of the low, like, deeper cuts, like Girlfriends LA and some of the Just Nikki and, like, some of those catalogs that we maybe didn't order anything from, but, like, remember getting or seeing ads for in, like, 17 Magazine or Cosmo Girl.
I really think that if you were between the ages of 9 and 21 in the 90s, you came across at least one Delia's catalog or one Girlfriends LA or a Just Nikki's or even like a Moxie magazine or catalog, because a lot of them were also connected to the beginning. They weren't just catalogs. It was sort of like the full 360 content marketing that you're so used to now, where a lot of these catalogs were eventually spun off into websites that kind of were all about like pop feminism for like a younger set.
Yeah, definitely like a lifestyle component where it was taking the concept of like the magalog or the catazine, whatever you want to call it, but giving it an online treatment.
It was sort of like co-opting the punk zine.
Yeah.
And merging it with consumer retail fashion. But I think what's good to note about these catalogs are that they also like reached a lot of girls who were not near like a city center, that didn't live like in LA or New York or DC or whatever, so that they could replicate what they saw on MTV or just flipping through a, like a teen magazine, and be able to like get the same look and not feel so isolated. In a lot of ways, it's also kind of where you shopped before there was like an H&M or a Forever 21. The catalogs were sort of integral to my back-to-school shopping. Or, if you were me visiting family in France, a Minitel. Which, I love the fuck out of those things. I thought that was so cool that you had a basically obsolete computer that could only order you things from, like, QVC. Like, or you could order from, like, they had like, a bunch of catalogs. You could pick whatever catalog you were looking for. And then you could pick your clothing through that. It was just like having a Victoria's, it was sort of like having Cher's closet,
yeah, that's
that you
what
see
I was
from Clueless
of.
Merged with a catalog, and it was very grainy and not like a good resolution. It looked like MS-DOS type shit.
Yeah.
But I still loved it. I love the novelty of it because I still to this day love getting nice things in the mail.
I tie my love of getting things in the mail to the lyrics, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Oh my God.
To bring it back to Sound of Music.
Did we bring that up in a previous episode? Did we tie something to Sound of Music?
No, we didn't. Or maybe we did. I don't know. I feel like, I honestly don't remember. But that's definitely like, I think where my love of getting things in the mail comes from, and my addiction for online shopping, for sure.
I'm pretty sure my love language is gifts, so I fucking love getting gifts in the mail, even if it's something that I forgot I ordered, or even something I know that I ordered that shows up. But nothing can replace the thrill of going to a mall. What were your favorite mall stores to hit up when you're like, new school year, new me?
Yeah.
And what were you getting?
Well, as we discussed, sadly, I went to Catholic school during most of my pivotal years where I was expressing myself through fashion. But my favorite stores for sure as a tween teen would have been, obviously, Delia's had a store in my mall, so I love that store.
Lucky.
Very lucky. Limited to when I was more of a tween. The Gap, I guess. And then I really liked PacSun for a while.
Duh.
Of course. And then
Did you guys have like a Tilly's?
No, Tilly's I don't think was a thing on the East Coast.
It's just a West Coast thing.
We also, I mean, Abercrombie at one point, but very short-lived because it was like, I was into it for a bit and then I was like, oh, wait, I'm paying $30 for a t-shirt that I like.
I just hated it because it was always dark and smelled too strongly. I remember one of the first times I went to Abercrombie to get a pair of jeans that I saw some other girl wearing that I really liked. Obviously, it was like the shredded ones. I was like, I'm just going to go in, let me get these fucking jeans, I'm going to leave. I'm not going to be a part of this like Abercrombie cult. But I walk in, I'm like, why is it so dark in here? And mind you, I had younger eyes.
No, you couldn't see a
couldn't see shit. And then anything. I finally find somebody who works there in a fucking polo, standing at the front, like, misting the place. I'm like, hey, where are your jeans? He's like, over there. And he points to, like, a dark corner. I'm like, where's that? I don't know.
They literally had, that was someone's job, because my sister worked for Abercrombie Kids at one point. That was her mall job. And that was a thing. You actually were spraying the clothes with their signature scent. That is someone's job. Some poor
to ruin. Junior
in high school between SAT prep is working Saturdays at the Abercrombie spraying cologne on polo shirts.
Well, remember when they had that terrible lawsuit and then everybody you know got like $1.58 because they had to, if you bought anything between the years of 2001 to 2008, which like I think almost everyone did.
Yeah.
They lost a lawsuit where they had to send you like a dollar and some change.
I never cashed in on that. That's really unfortunate.
Yeah, me neither.
What were your stores at the mall?
Definitely I loved an Express. I still kind of love an Express, even though I don't go inside. I was more of like a Mervyn's. I was a Maxinista, like a TJ Maxx, a Marshall's.
Oh yeah,
kind of gal. I went to. I loved a Lowman's. Like my mom is a legendary discount shopper, and she's also very thrifty. So I sort of had like a mix of clothes, but I definitely always kind of defaulted to like a limited two, not even like a limited two, because I did get a lot of stuff from there as well. And then when I started to outgrow it, I would sort of repurpose it as like dance clothes.
Yeah.
Because they did a lot of like twin sets and it just sort of made you look put together.
Yeah. And they had a lot of the built-in bra tank top.
Yes. I just loved a Sam Goody whenever I would have to go to the mall, but mostly we went to like a lot of department stores. But the Beverly Center, which was, shout out, one of my malls in addition to the Burbank Mall, but the Beverly Center had a Delia's for a moment in time. They also had a Beyond the Beach and a Bath and Body Works. So you sort of just, like, hit them all. And I think they also had, like, niche. Well, they also had a pet store that definitely had Puppy Mill puppies in there. But they were so cute, and I was, like, 8. I didn't know. And they also had, like, niche stationery stores, which is still very much my shit. So that's why I kind of liked going there.
Yeah, no, I was a big fan. I worked in a stationery store at the Tyson's. So I my mall was Tyson's Corner Center, or Tyson's Mall in Virginia. And I worked in that mall in high school, and in breaks between in college between school semesters. I worked at an Aeropostale or Aeropostale.
Aeropostale.
And they never clarified the spelling.
Like, are you serious?
Or the pronunciation.
How dare you? Are a worker.
I know. I made a reasonable $6 in that. I worked at a mom and pop stationery store that was in the mall as well in between breaks in college, which was great because I learned everything there was to know about fountain pens.
Oh, I was very happy to discover as of yesterday that the photo place that I used to work at is still open in Burbank. So
Oh, good. You
go, Cam Photo. I was very pleasantly surprised. I was like, oh, in this day and age, film, you're still buying it? All right.
Yeah, I think the stationery store is closed, sadly. And then I think that Aeropostale.
Are they still? I don't think they're still a thing.
I think they may have lost the battle.
And a lot of the research that I did for Delia's, there was a lot of talk about like the mall apocalypse, like retail, longstanding retail stores going out of business. Like I guess JCPenney's not out of business, but like a Sears or something, a staple.
Well, and Penny's is close. I mean, they filed for bankruptcy for sure.
Do you have an iconic back to school look? And by iconic, I mean tragic.
Well, for me, because of the uniform, I think most of mine were around accessories and haircuts. So I mentioned in the Olsen Twins episode, I tried to recreate one of Mary Kate's haircuts. I believe it was in Our Lips Are Sealed. And it was like kind of a layered.
Choppy layers.
Choppy layers. And it looked so cute on her, not so cute on me.
I mean, you quickly discovered that you need to have a very specific type of hair in order to pull that off.
Yes, and a small face, which I do not have. And then I definitely once in high school bought a messenger bag because I wanted to appear cool. Mm. That lasted about 2 seconds because I had like a billion textbooks and that shit does not fare well in a messenger bag. And then
messenger bags just don't fare well in real life anyway. I finally bought one of those fucking chrome bags when I was working full-time in the city right after college. And quickly I was like, this is hurting my shoulder and it doesn't hold very much. No. I fucking hate this.
No. The last thing that I remember of my iconic looks, actually this was pretty good. I had for school shoes in high school, I had the Doc Marten Mary Jane shoes, and that was because we had to wear specific, you know, like black or brown or whatever, Catholic school.
Did they have any, like, buckle restrictions?
No, but I did in my middle school, Catholic middle school. I think I helped. I'm the reason why they wrote a new rule for shoes. I had skirted around the heel rule with platform school shoes. I think they were like Steve Madden. You remember those chunky?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Quite
so,
well.
So I had a pair of those, and I'm pretty sure they put a rule against them after, because they did skirt around the rules. But
of having a high heel.
Right. But they were still, you know, high up. So anyway, that's my claim to fame. What was your iconic look?
I think it was coming into seventh grade. I decided that I was going to take the plunge and do... I had too many things going at once. I had the Natalie Imbruglia torn haircut. A Hot Topic had recently opened in Burbank. And so I had a shirt that said Bad Kitty on it in, like, rhinestone. I also got braces that year. It was a fucking mess. As I said, too many themes. I needed to, like, pick. I should have been, like, I'm either goth or I have an edgy haircut. Or something else, but I had, or like, I'm just doing the brace face thing, which that was a whole nightmare. So that was one terrible look. I also decided, I think it was going into 10th grade, I was in my punk phase. So I had orange hair, still had braces, but I was getting them off soon. And I had like, it was sort of like Farrah Fawcett hair, but it was like bright orange, and I didn't want like a regular backpack, so I ended up getting a diaper bag from a thrift store called American Way in Burbank, and I wanted it, the diaper bag, because it had a bunch of different pockets, but it was also Peter Rabbit, and I was like, fuck yeah. It's like, this is so fucking punk rock. And I also had Doc Martens, but they were vinyl Doc Martens. I believe they were 16 eyelets, and I wore those. Yeah. I mean, September, it's not chilly in Burbank. It is quite warm. It is at least in the 90s, and I wore those almost every fucking day, like a complete lunatic.
Yeah, I mean, I wore those because I had to wear school shoes. I wore those Doc Marten Mary Jane, like, for 3 years of high school. I think those were my school shoes. They lasted. Testament to Docs.
Yeah, I never had a hot girl summer or a hot nerd fall. Like, I failed completely at that, so I'm very happy to have all the pressure of back to school off of my shoulders. But when I was working at, like, an after-school program, having to see their list of, like, back-to-school needs just would have caused so much anxiety. Like, you need, like, crayons and, like, a bunch of different kinds, and you gotta get a new backpack, and you have to bring Kleenex for the class. Like, what?
And a lot of times the specificity around that, like, it must be this color, this
brand. Non-bleach markers.
Do people still have to buy TI-83 calculators?
I don't know. I mean, you have a fucking calculator on your phone now. I have no idea what you need.
I don't know how Texas Instruments is making money these days, but I remember, like, and this is for decades, because it was the 82.
They definitely cornered the middle school geometry market.
Everyone had to buy that calculator, and now you could probably get a way better graphing calculator on your phone with an app. So I can't imagine that TI-83 is selling those anymore. People are requiring them. At least
I don't know. Have you walked through a fucking Staples recently? That shit's like a ghost town.
Yeah, I have. I certainly have not, which is why it is a ghost town. But yeah, I mean, with back to school, as we discussed, like, fashion was key. I think for me, you know, looking back, and I think this ties in nicely to our last episode on the Spice Girls, there was a huge amount of spending cash for teen, tween girls in the late 90s. This was like, you know, we were kids of baby boomers. There were a ton of people our age. In fact, in 2001, tweens, so this is like the 10 to 14 set, numbered about 27.6 million people. That sounds, maybe it was more, sorry, I don't have the exact age number, but I think it was tweens, early teens was a pretty large amount of the population. And the spending power was that they were influencing more than $150 million in annual family spending. Like,
whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, Clinton time. I remember there was a lot of spending happening, at least in my house.
No, for sure. For sure. And it was, and so as a result, there were, you know, all these kind of voids that had never been filled by a niche type of store. And I think
what it is like a perfect breeding ground, for lack of a better term, for niche markets, because you have so many people to target and so many different demographics and groups.
For sure. And I think this kind of segues nicely into Limited too, which is the first store that we, you know, immediately thought of when we were kind of doing all the research for this episode, since it was such a big deal for us. So little history on Limited 2. It was originally a subsidiary of the Limited, so it used to just be kind of a corner of the Limited store. The Limited was a women, actually it doesn't even exist anymore, but the Limited was a women's retail store.
They were sort of like an Express.
Yeah, very much. I feel like they were a little more not professional, but a little older, I would say.
Yeah, it's sort of like between like an Ann Taylor Loft and a Express. Also, yeah. Oh gosh, it's on the tip of my tongue. It'll
like
come
a
back
New York
and
Company?
Yes. Oh, Max Mara?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Or like a BCBG or a BB almost.
Yeah, but a bit cheaper.
Like the cheaper end of like that mid-market business late, like for sure. Party girl business lady.
No, for sure, for sure. Like an outfit that you can take from day to night.
Day to night, which is generally just a sequined top.
Usually, yeah.
Nine times out of ten.
Little accent. So it started out in 1987, so it was just a corner of like the Limited store or like a small little adjoining store. And they were originally just kind of branding towards young girls. And by 1995, they had 255 locations. And in 1996, they hired Michael Radin, who became the president, chairman, and the CEO of Limited 2. And he had come from Pac Sun. And so this was back when they were called still Pacific Sunwear.
Right.
And so this
Pac Sun was like a recent thing. Like it became that in like 2003 or something.
Right, right. But even before then, even though they were, I mean, this was like the mid 90s. So it's like surfer skater wear. It was very popular. So
Dogtown Z Boys, et cetera.
Exactly. He'd done really good things over there in Tony Hawk. And so then he goes to Limited 2 and he decides they're going to corner the market more towards this group called tweens, because no one had really done this marketing. You had Gap Kids, you had a couple of other adult companies that had their own kind of children tween line, but it wasn't so like specified as Limited to. And so he decides that he's going to make this place as like what he said in a quote in this one article I was reading. I saw it as kind of a little Urban Outfitters for a girl with appropriate merchandise and an exciting mix of hard and soft goods. So a place where you felt like you could shop for your clothes, for your room, and just have a place where you kind of play around with whatever. And so he wanted it to be a place where people could hang out. And so at its peak in the next few years, they started to experience like crazy numbers. By 1998, they had 311 stores, and they were the faster growing division of the Limited. They were posting a 24% sales growth to reach revenues of $322 million a year. And then their average store size, which is pretty big, was like 4,000 square feet. And I forgot.
Whoa.
But I forgot about that.
They were huge.
Like, they were,
but because
really
they, like
big.
You said, they had like a combo of things.
They did everything.
They were like a smaller department store.
They did, exactly. They really thought of what is everything that a tween girl has to buy. You have to buy clothes for school. You have to buy accessories. You have to buy gifts for people's birthdays. Furniture for your room. And they really thought of all that. And so
and even something down to bedding.
Bedding. They even had candy. Like, you could get your ears pierced there, like Claire's. Like, they did everything. And so they started in 1998 to start selling those home design items, such as, like, inflatable chairs. That was, like,
That was so huge.
Oh, my God. I wanted one so badly. I had a butterfly chair, which was, like, the ones that were on, like, a wire frame that you would put the fabric on top.
Oh, okay. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And I had, like, a blue furry one. Or my sister had that one. I had a different one. Like, they had a lot of those furry cushions. Like, this was all the rage. Body glitter everywhere. Shortly,
so much body glitter, the roll-on sticks,
everything. So I remember buying a hair mascara. That was the thing too, where you'd have hair streaks.
Oh my God, yeah. Emily, I completely forgot about that.
Yes, I had one from Limited too, and it was lime scented. It was a green one.
Oh my God,
and it was lime scented.
You just brought back like a weird birthday party memory.
Right. So they start going in 2000 with their accessories that accounted for 18% of their sales. They extended their offerings to include swimwear, robes, and sleepwear, and intimate apparel. So they sold everything. And then eventually, in 1999, they spun off like a rebellious tween. They spun off from the Limited and became their own thing, Limited 2 Inc. and later 2 Inc. And then they had a design team in 2000 of nearly 40 people.
Whoa.
I talk about a dream job, like having, working at limited to like corporate in like when I was 12 years old would have been like the coolest job in the world.
A corporate job would have been the coolest job to
you. Yeah, like 13 going on 30 situation where it's like, you know, I read Sparkle.
Okay. So yeah. If you like woke up
yeah.
as your 30-year-old self and you worked at limited to, you'd be stoked.
Like
okay,
on
got
the
it.
Design team.
Not like as a 13-year-old being like, I hope that this is my job.
No. Yeah. This is like a big or 13 going on 30 situation is what I'm thinking.
I'm thinking about pulling a big. Kind of a real big situation.
They used focus groups. They had sponsorships of concerts and events. Like, I remember they did a heavy promo with Lizzie McGuire, which makes sense because if you look at Hillary Duff's wardrobe, that was,
I mean,
like,
those pedal pushers.
I mean, it was all, like,
Hillary, and those platform flip-flops.
Lizzie and Miranda's wardrobes were heavily
clips, hair clips.
If not Delia's, then limited to, for sure.
Yeah. It was definitely
the twisty
a combo
butterfly bit. Clips yeah. and all that, of course. And then they launched their catalog in 1999, which they called a catazine. So that's what I was talking about earlier. Someone in marketing.
A magalog
or a catazine.
Magalog sounds like an insult.
It was mailed directly to 1.5 million preteen girls and featured, in addition to clothing and accessories for sale, articles on fashion tips, advice on how to mix and match colors. They had a crossword puzzle, beauty tips. Calendar of events for teen interest. So this was, I mean, they did everything. And they also went online in around 2000, 2001. They launched limited2.com where they had quizzes. They had all sorts of offerings that you would find on like a teen magazine website. In 2004, they opened their first Justice store, which is limited to, but discount. So it's going to be very similar style, but at a much cheaper price point. Because something worth noting with limited to, I don't remember if you guys remember this, that shit was expensive. It was not cheap. And like, that was something for me, at least, was a special occasion place. Like, I did not buy everything. My parents could not afford buying everything at limited to. And so what happens is Justice starts to eclipse limited to, and by 2008, they decide to make the decision that they are going to switch everything from limited to Justice. And so they proceed to flip the like 400 or so limited to stores into, 560 were rebranded as Justice, and they closed about 26 of them.
Oh, well, only closing 26, that's actually not that bad.
It's pretty impressive. And
I mean, it's not great, but it could be worse out of 500 some odd stores.
Right, no, for sure. And so in 2009, and this is right after recession, it's the rise of fast fashion. Like, people just were not spending as much money on kids' clothing. And so Justice made sense. And then cut to about 7 or 8 years later in 2015, they relaunched online. They're now available at JCPenney, speaking of retailers that are not doing well, Amazon.
Dork.
And Burlington Coat Factory. And
I'm speaking of questionably still open, Burlington Coat Factory.
Yeah, that may not be there anymore either. I think.
No, I still see their commercials. I think they're still here.
They said that part of the relaunch, there was this great Mike article about when the relaunch happened about 4 or 5 years ago, where they were saying that it had to do with the nostalgia factor. And former customers of the store, like people our age, were now having kids and would want the nostalgia, which is, again, I mean, it's totally perfectly normal in most parts of this country for a 30-something to have like a 12-year-old daughter. But for us, so... But yeah, it's true. And then that was like, so that's a whole thing. And so now I did a little research. I went on the Limited To website. I showed Margo. It looks like it has not been updated.
It looks like a GeoCity site for sure.
And
it's here's a bunch of clip art, I guess.
Readers, if any of you are web designers, maybe
reach out
to Limited To.
Get Emily's 13 going on 30 dream job.
Do some pro bono work for Limited To and give them a snazzy website that they deserve.
Or just point them in the direction of Squarespace, for fuck's sake.
That's true. I mean, it's not that much, is it? They have some nice
templates.
Not
that
hard.
If I can figure out Squarespace, anyone can.
Anyone can. Some other highlights here. Limited to, as we talked about, was very expensive. But that was where the store, like, my mom would take me there as a treat. Or if I wanted that for a birthday present, like, I could get an outfit there. And that was, like, the gift. I remember getting my first full outfit from there. And it was for my 10th birthday. That's what I wanted. It was, like, I want Limited to. So I had, my dad took me, I had a little royal blue, like, V-neck shirt that had Limited 2 on it. And then I had a jean skort.
Oh, the jean skort. Or yep. just skorts in general.
Skorts in general, which sadly I had to wear in high school because that was our uniform.
How? Yeah, Catholic school. Did not miss doing that in high school.
Nope. Terrible. I have a school picture in my parents' house of me wearing a little Limited 2. It was a tank top with, like, they were really big on the royal blue, turquoise, lime green color
scheme. I feel like those were their colors,
though. Those were their colors, and I had, like, a stripe effect, similar to, like, a top you would buy at Madewell now, like, which explains a lot of why I buy
If you shopped at Limited 2 as a child, you shop at Madewell now.
You pretty much. Pretty
and also, much. The same could be said about Delia's.
It's a muted, yeah, palette. I think the last thing to really bring up are I had, of course, some, like, silky pajamas from there that were lavender with, like, butterflies on them. Some great sparkly blue nail polish.
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah. I think everyone had a variation on silky pajamas at one point as right. a kid. Like
the shorts and the button-down. Yeah,
which is exactly what I had. And literally the shirt I'm wearing right now from Madewell is maybe an homage to that
This is
time.
Legit head-to-toe Madewell. Yeah. Madewell pants, Madewell tank top.
I'm wearing Madewell head to toe as well. But of course, the last thing I want to bring up was before they were famous, there were a couple of actresses who were about to say Victoria's Secret models. No. Before they were famous, there were several actresses who were Limited 2 models, including Jessica Alba, Jessica Biel, and Leighton Meester. I was hoping to find more. I didn't, but I'm sure if I did a deeper dive, I could find some more.
Leighton Meester!
I know, good for her. So that's really what I had on Limited 2. It was owned by L Brands, which is still the company that owned the Limited. And at one point or another, just a couple of the names of the stores that L Brands owned at one point or another. The Limited, Limited 2, Victoria's Secret, Bath & Body Works, Lane Bryant, Express, Abercrombie & Fitch. So they were the, like, mall, I mean, this...
Mall icons who mall have suffered icons. The... mall apocalypse that's been happening.
That really has happened, sadly. But that's Limited too.
Limited 2 is a really good segue into Delia's because I think they share a lot. Delia's was the catalog version until they became a limited mall store run.
Right.
But obviously we're a huge Delia's fan because our header photo on our SoundCloud page is a Delia's picture. I just felt like it encapsulated a lot of our personality. Mm-hmm. Mostly the, like, nonsensical upper lowercase copy that was around it kind of felt really true to a 90s girl aesthetic and, like, something that you could look at and be like, oh yeah, no, I totally remember that.
Yeah.
Because if you were a girl in the 90s, you had stuff marketed to you, you definitely came across at least one Delia's catalog in your time. Because before there was Pinterest or Instagram to give you style inspo, sometimes all you had was a Delia's catalog.
And a pair of scissors.
And I know that to be true for myself. Mm-hmm. And even though Delia's was, for me and my mom, the same thing, a special occasion store, like birthday, holiday. If I needed, like, a new big piece, like, I got, like, a winter coat from there one time, like a pea coat, which I had waited years for my mom to be like, fine, we can splurge on, like, a nice pea coat from there. But it was also great because Delia's, you could find pieces that looked a lot like, or if not were exactly that, at TJ Maxx or at a Marshall's and at that price point.
I definitely did buy a bunch of things at TJ Maxx that resembled what I had seen at Delia's.
I mean, Atlanta does a great episode in the second season where it's like a flashback to Donald Glover's character, like, doing back-to-school shopping with his mom, and they're at Marshall's, and she buys him, like, a bootleg FUBU shirt. That was 100% my upbringing, except swap FUBU with, like, Delia's bootleg. But, I mean, I got my best imitation Olsen Twins pieces from Delia's because that's how, like, kind of hip and current that they were.
For sure.
Delia's is definitely marked by its effortless cool girl style, and when you flip through the pages, you see people that look like your best friend's older sister who's really cool and, like, drives you places, or you see, like, a lot of Fiona Apples, or you just see the best pieces of Cher's closet from Clueless throughout the pages, and it just inspires you to express yourself in your clothes like these girls seem to be doing. It was definitely the first time I ever saw Paul Frank in that fucking sock monkey.
My learner's permit picture in Virginia was taken wearing a pink Paul Frank sock monkey hoodie.
Oh my god. I remember my friend Cassandra got the Paul Frank wallet with the sock monkey on the front, and yep. I've never been more jealous in my whole life.
I loved it. Julius the monkey. That was his name.
Thank you. I just wrote fucking sock monkey in my notes. This was also the first time you were introduced to the Surfer Girl chic brand of Roxy, or at least it was for me, even though I was from Southern California, which spurned a very strange style time for me personally, where I would wear nothing but board shorts to school with long sleeve shirts underneath my t-shirts. All Roxy, of course. Yeah. And then some of that was definitely purchased at like a Ross.
Yeah, don't you worry. So much Roxy at Ross and Marshall's.
Yeah, and Billabong too. Yep. I definitely got I got a Roxy bathing suit that I saw in Delia's at a Marshall's or like a Lowman's, and I was so pumped. I was like, "Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to be so hot this summer." It never was my summer. Didn't matter what bikini I was wearing. Pieces that Delia's were known for, especially you would see your friends wearing, and it was very on trend for the tween demographic that they were hitting, were camisole tank tops, maxi skirts. Before there was athleisure, there was snowboarder outerwear.
Yep.
Where there's those like those wide baggy pants that would make the shh noise whenever you walked, yep. But you would wear them every day to school.
Of course.
You would get your very first fancy party dress or school dance dress from Delia's.
A choir concert sweater, thank you very much.
I told you this before we recorded, but I was flipping through a Tumblr, and I don't know why I said flipping through, because it was the internet, but I was clicking through a Tumblr that had old backlog Delia's catalog, and bless you, 90s, or Time Machine 90s Tumblr, for uploading a bunch of scans of Delia's catalogs, because I eventually came across my special occasion holiday dress. It was like my birthday Christmas present, and it was like a black sort of mini dress. It was like a little bit above the knee, which was like huge for me at like 12, and it was like a slip dress and had like a mesh overlay, and it was short sleeve kind of wrap dress, and it was all black because I was also goth, duh, don't forget, and it had a blue velvet piping, and it was matched with like these, like a dark blue, midnight blue and black platform, sort of like those slippers that you see in Chinatown that have sort of like a wallpapery fabric. So I got the flats version of that in Chinatown, and I wore my hair up in those two little buns, and I thought I was the fucking coolest kid you've ever seen.
Listeners, I wanted this dress so hard and never got it. And so as an adult, to tie it back to Madewell, yours truly bought from the sale one time a mesh dress that had a slip component that had like, it's really cute. I still own it with like, I think I still do, with like polka dots, like gold and silver polka dots.
I think I know what dress you're talking about.
Yeah. And I wore it.
Because I too was like, do I want to get this?
I bought it because it was on sale and it reminded me of the dress I never had that you had.
Well, I also never got that Barbie Hot Wheels that I will never let go.
I had that. There we go. See?
See? The universe evens it all out.
I think it's having two girls. That's really it. My parents could justify like, oh, if she can't play with it at one point, the other one will.
Oh, that's actually a very good point. The curse of an only child.
Cost efficiency. I did not get an American Girl doll, though. That was...
Oh, sorry. I had two.
That's when I found out Santa Claus wasn't real.
I found out Santa Claus wasn't real when I didn't get a fucking hamster, which... Why did I want a hamster? They're the most useless pet.
My hamsters killed one another. One killed the other.
I've heard of that. There was... Not my school, but a different friend's elementary school had two hamsters kill each other in their science project area. Sounded terrifying.
Two men or two women hamsters together, they kill one another. If you put male and female, they have babies. So there's really no...
So you just have a hamster.
You have a hamster. You should not have two.
Okay, we've diverged dramatically away from pieces. I'm just going to quickly blow through the rest of the pieces that you might remember. Delia's floor, overalls, jean, and corduroy form. The tulle, ball-length tulle skirt with a spaghetti strap tank top. So, like, the high-low kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Board shorts, as I mentioned. Platform sandals, Mary Jane's, clogs. Roxy's hula scent. That was the first place I ever saw it. And then I would just go buy it at ValSurf. And then butterfly clips and chokers. Definitely chokers were a huge thing. And the butterfly clips, they were very well known for the accessories. Mostly because if you were a broke tween who, you know, was just using their babysitter money, like I did, that was all you could really afford were the accessories.
I had a lot of sweaters there that I would wear during the holidays. Like
I feel like Christmas was a good time to like con auxiliary family members when they ask you what you wanted into getting you Delia stuff, because you're like, yeah, this is my penance for having to spend the next 2 weeks with you over the course of the holidays.
And some of those things I bought early on in high school, and I had them until senior year. In fact, I just remembered my senior superlative photo for, surprising, most talkative, was shot with me wearing a Delia sweater. Like I was looking at my old yearbook when I was back for the holidays, I was like, oh yeah, that sweater is from Delia's.
Hung on to so much Delia's stuff. Just took really good care of it because it didn't obviously come around all of the time. And it was special occasion stuff, so I did want to preserve it and make sure that it looked nice and I could wear it for as long as possible.
Yes.
So Delia's debuted in 1994, and by 1998, it was sending out 55 million catalogs a year. They called it Delia's at first. They do not know where the name comes from. I checked a lot of different places as to who Delia's was or how it was inspired. But thanks to Tamara Enkenberg at the Baltimore Sun for her article on one of the founders, and thanks to Multichannel Merchant, who covered the purchase of Delia's in 2003 by Mark DelFranco, that I got a majority of like these numbers, and in addition to like Wikipedia, where I got some of this info from. So Delia's, they don't know where it came from, but initially they created 20,000 catalogs in 1994 and hired students at NYU and Columbia to distribute them. And for a while, they weren't hitting very well, but they finally decided that their sort of voice that they were aiming towards was for a girl who's reading YM or watching MTV and seeing a bunch of cool stuff, but they live in a small town and they don't have any place to buy any of that. So Delia's was founded by Stephen Kahn and Chris Edgar. Chris Edgar, at the time of Delia's launch, was getting his doctorate in comparative literature at Columbia when Delia's was created, and him and Stephen Kahn were roommates and friends at Yale several years prior. Stephen Kahn got the idea to sell clothes to women on the Columbia campus thanks to his younger sister, but they quickly decided that they should tailor their business closer to the 10 to 24-year-old market because they saw it was reaching high school kids because they had college-age siblings, and it was sort of circulating kind of word of mouth through there. And they decided that they were going to focus on the three C's: commerce, community, and content. Mm. And so they ended up, that's how they kind of initially turned their catalog into a cultural phenomenon. And Delia's just sort of built off of their word of mouth buzz to propel them to like the next upper echelon. And so when they did it, they didn't really think anything was going to come of it. And so they had sort of created a magazine that was going to be tailored more towards their generation by using clever phrases and cool clothes, but it ended up resonating much more strongly with the tween market. So according to The Cut, 4 million people, or 10% of the 40 million female millennials currently living in the United States, have requested a Delia's catalog in their life.
Wow.
At the height of their popularity, they held 20 million names, constituting 30 to 40% of U.S. consumers between the ages of 12 and 18, which is like a crazy coveted demographic.
A hotbed for data breach.
But also, it's exactly who you want to target because they're spending their parents' money.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
In August of 1998, which was their pinnacle, Delia's was receiving anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 catalog requests every single day. Some places also reported as 7,000, but I'm going to just stay on the safe side. The company had a whopping 5 million names in their database. Each one had a precise order history. The price point was sort of like on the higher side, but as we said, the accessories could be sort of like a more easy entry point because it was a little bit more affordable, like in the $10 to $12 range. But tank tops started at about $18, and some of like the higher end pieces like jeans or a dress were like in the $48 range, and like coats were like in the $100 range. They were the first to offer a girl's look and attitude that was a little bit more contemporary and edgy, and they capitalized on the girl power movement that was happening at the time. Apparently, in the 90s, books like Reviving Ophelia were on every parent's nightstand.
My mom had that book.
And improving girls' self-esteem as they transitioned into womanhood was a national conversation topic. The U.S. Health Department and Human Services launched a girl power campaign in 1997 with vague aims to empower young women. So even though Delia's was a brand and a consumer-driven brand, obviously, benefit greatly from you spending your parents' money, they were one of the few that encouraged young women in this age range to express themselves through their clothes, hair, accessories, and room decor. Their catalog featured a really fun format that like mixed the upper lowercase font, saying things like more flirtatious than your friend's older brother, or staying cool in the summer, and sometimes even like the fill in the blank Mad Lib style one, alongside chicks who could be your cool best friend at summer camp wearing a super rad outfit alongside another row of butterfly clips that you also wanted to buy. As the founders once described it, it was to quench a thirst for something inaccessible of a downtown style for girls who are reading YM and watching MTV and frustrated to see a bunch of cool stuff living in their small town and nowhere to go buy it. It forced you to sort of more engage with the content, especially through like the Mad Libs, to kind of put yourself in these models' positions, even if you didn't necessarily like love the outfit, it was really aspirational in a lot of ways. And it asked you to interact with a catalog, which was kind of difficult to do. And it wasn't just like a call and order kind of thing, even if you could call 1-800-DELIA-NY. And looking through it at like with 2019 eyes, it just looks like a lot of what Billie Eilish would wear, honestly.
For sure.
Behind the scenes is really important because this is the team that was responsible for like the day in, day out. And they created the catalog essentially out of nothing, out of these guys' dream of selling clothes or upselling clothes to like a college age girl market. So there's Kevin Hatt, who is the in-house photographer, who also worked with the Beastie Boys and was a huge influence on the coolness aspect of the photos that everybody knows and loves so much. Mostly Kevin would just let the girls be themselves in the photos, and they were largely spur of the moment. A lot of the models were also skaters, in addition to obviously being professional teenage models, and they weren't allowed to show their more tomboy side, which is why they loved working for Delia so much, and that's why I feel like a lot of the pure joy, spontaneity pictures feel so naturalistic was because they were really enjoying themselves. There, when Delia's was going out of business in 2014, the first time, they had a couple of interviews with some models that I will touch on in a minute. And they just talked about how Delia's was the brand that they loved and looked forward to working with the most. There was nothing weird going on. The behind the scenes team was very involved and very interested in hearing their ideas about what works and what doesn't work. And they were just really allowed and given the space to just be themselves.
That's so refreshing after the retrospect that we've been getting lately on some of these brands, shows, everything, where you're like, oh, this was run by horrible people. Great. Like, it's nice to hear that.
Yeah. It's like, oh, the CEO was accused of being a sexual harasser. Like, there was none of that. There was no, like, unsafe quality. Like, one of the models talks about in an interview with MTV, I believe, or maybe it was Vogue, but she talks about going to Delia's with her mom because her mom was also a stylist, but she also very much enjoyed just being around like the Delia's vibe. There was Charlene Benson. She was the creative director. She was working at least at first at Delia's while she still had a full-time job at Mademoiselle for the first year that she was at Delia's. It was her idea to do the irregular capitalization and the captions, spoofing Cosmo covers with stuff like how to kiss a boy and how to tell if he likes you. She decided to go the other way and imagine a girl who was less worried about boys and was much more creative and a free spirit who was more concerned about hanging out with her friends. The first catalog was a huge success, and they sold every piece of merchandise that they sold. Then she ended up going full-time after that. Galadriel Masterson. I hope I didn't butcher that first name. She was the stylist. She's also referred to as like a big sister aunt type by a lot of the other models and in some of the other pieces that I was sort of poking around and trying to get a sense of like the team that brought this catalog to life. And everybody just talked about how all of the models loved her, and she had a great rapport with all of them, and they just loved to be around her, and that she was known mostly for putting stuff together that wasn't super matchy or super outfitty, but seemed like a teenage girl would go into her closet and just pick these things. Mm. And Masterson and the hair and makeup woman, Tracy Murphy, were starting their careers out together in addition to the model. So it was like a really exciting, like, the possibilities are endless kind of time as well. A huge boon to Delia's, especially in their marketing, whether it was intentional or not, was that they used a lot of the same models over the course of the magazine's production, which is why some of the former quote-unquote Delia's girls still get recognized today. Like I said, when Delia's closed in 2014, MTV and Vogue tracked down some catalog regulars. There's Janelle Fishman. She was covered by Vogue. She was a brunette model with big eyes. And Kim Mataluva. She was interviewed by MTV. She was the blonde who I thought looked a lot like Fiona Apple, and she made a lot of silly faces. They both had stories about being approached by women that are now their age and, like, a little bit younger, coming up to them being like, were you in a Delia's catalog? Like, you look so familiar. Other notable models who have posed for Delia's in their iconic catalog are Miranda Kerr, Brooklyn Decker, Rosie Huntington-Whitley, Cassie of You and Me fame, and Kristen Ritter. They essentially built characters out of these models over the course of following them in the catalog. You could see how one girl or a few of the different girls could transform themselves and their looks with just clothes and accessories every single time you check in or every quarter you would check in. Having a set of reoccurring models definitely was part of the appeal of Delia's. It really kind of helped you identify. You could have a favorite. You could have multiple favorites. It just created a cast of characters that just made you more attached than just seeing clothes on a body and being like, yes, I want that. And it's very similar to how Victoria's Secret has angels, and people have their quote-unquote favorites, and they always want to buy whatever she's wearing. So as for whether or not Delia's is still in business, it is a long story, and I will try and sum it up as quickly as I can. It also kind of spills over into Alloy, which I'll be talking about, but Alloy doesn't have a ton of information, so just bear with me. There's going to be a little bit of crossover. First, Alloy agreed in July of 2001 to buy its closest rival, Delia's, which at the time, or at its peak, was making $137 million, but they bought Delia's in 2001 for $50 million.
Low.
I know. They talk about it in multi-channel merchant article about how it was essentially a steal and that this was as big of a deal in the retail space as like Britney and Justin breaking up or getting together. Whatever. Pick your poison. So the combined company will have an annual catalog, internet, and retail sales of roughly $300 million, and a database of more than 20 million names of consumers between the ages of 18, or I'm sorry, of consumers between the ages of 12 and 18. It's so hot in here, I'm losing my mind. Anyway. Since the early to mid-1990s, Delia's and Alloy's have been on similar but different paths. When Delia's launched in 1994, a year and a half before Alloy, they were not quick to take to the internet. Actually, they launched the internet arm second, and Alloy, by comparison, launched the internet arm first. Delia's made a lot of really bad investments in random companies. They bought like a kids company. They bought CCS, which ended up being sold to Foot Locker and was eventually made into like a shoe company.
Wasn't their kids line called Dot Dot Dash? I think that's what it was called.
Whose?
Delia's had a girls' store. It was called Dot Dot Dash.
Sounds familiar.
It lasted for like 2 seconds.
Right, just like their men's line.
Right.
No, like Delia's bought, what did they buy? They bought a soccer catalog. They bought Storybook Heirlooms and Just for Kids.
I remember that catalog.
They bought iTurf. They bought a bunch of like random stuff. They just didn't make any sound investments. So while they were doing that, Alloy was essentially being a title holding company. They made smart, sound decisions. And so Delia's got hurt with a lot of costly leases on top of some. So they're basically chasing bad money after bad in some ways. So they not only invested in a bunch of things that didn't really serve them, they also had a lot of costly leases that they were trying to renegotiate. And they also went on that was their spending spree, just buying a bunch of random stuff that just didn't end up folding into any of their properties. But Alloy, in addition to owning Delia's, also owned Girlfriends LA, and it brought the overall number of Alloy's owning between Delia's themselves and Girlfriends LA to $318.3 million. The total circulation of Delia's catalog at the time of being purchased by Alloy was $35 million in 2001. Delia's in 2014 announced that it was preparing for bankruptcy and planning to liquidate its assets. The following year, the brand's intellectual property sold for $2.5 million to a subsidiary, which also bought Alloy from Delia's for $3.7 million in 2013. As of 2019, bring you all the way back to current times, Delia's has a capsule collection / licensing deal with the SF e-commerce / San Francisco. I think they only have one or two brick and mortar stores called Dolls Kill. They're sort of like a Forever 21, but I feel like they're most known for having festival gear. Like they will release capsule collections for Burning Man, for Coachella,
right,
for Lollapalooza. So that's what they're known for. But I went and checked, and they did justice. It was a huge deal in 2015, around the time when they first launched the licensing deal. Maybe it was 2016. And they went through painstaking detail to recreate a lot of looks. They had a lot of the same look and feel as like the catalog. So it felt like a real linear move. It's sort of like Lisa Frank has a lot of licensing deals out now as well. And that's how Hello Kitty makes their money. They have a ton of licensing deals.
Yep.
That's why you have like a Hello Kitty rice maker and all sorts of other wild shit. So other competition to Delia's at the peak was Alloy, obviously, who bought them later, Just Nikki, Zoe, Wet Seal, Moxie Girl, Airshop, and then at one point, Delia's did spin off a boy brand called Droog Boy, and it lasted from 1998 to 2000. And some little small tidbits, when they tried to make it into the content space, they launched Girl.com in 1998, which was huge at the time.
Yeah.
But then the teen tween market exploded shortly thereafter, and they were outpaced by, like, the Teen Vogues and the L for Teens and all the other established brands that were spinning off into the tween market. And so they eventually sold to 17 Magazine.
I owned a book from Girl.com. Like, they published print books, too, on, like, beauty tips and stuff, so.
Oh, I loved girl.com.
Yeah,
and then when I turned it to 17.com, it was a little bit confusing, but essentially 17.com was using or 17 was using girl.com to basically be their digital arm. And now if you type in girl.com, it just takes you to 17 magazine. And then last little tidbit about Delia's, I remember their furniture catalog and all of their bedroom stuff and their inflatable furniture, but their inflatable furniture was a little bit pricey, so the knockoff place that you would get the inflatable furniture from, at least in SoCal, was a place called Aha's, and it was like a novelty gift shop, but they had all sorts of wild room decor that was very similar to Delia's, but as I was telling Emily when I was like flipping through, not flipping through because it's on the internet, looking through a Tumblr of Delia's catalogs, I looked at some home goods stuff and remembered that I owned a set of sheets from Delia's just by, I saw it and was like, oh, long lost sheets. They're like cosmic cats. And I don't know, it just sent me back to a much simpler time. All right, you want to look at a couple really quickly Delia's looks that we can just describe. Like, I think that this is a quintessential Delia's page.
Yeah.
So we have a girl in, she's got like in those snowboard track pants.
Yeah.
That they're black with like red piping and a white stripe and like a camisole white tank top that looks like an undershirt, but it's not.
Right.
Oh, that's one of the models that was interviewed.
Oh, I remember her.
That's Kim. That's Kim.
Oh, cool.
In the red ringer tee and baggy jeans.
That was such a big thing.
Just these little, like, camisole, like, the cut of this camisole, like, the little tiny scoop neck.
Yep.
Because if you went to France and you went to Le Petit Bateau, you could get the same thing for
right.
half the price.
Yep.
And they would sell them in packs of three shirts.
Yep.
There's also, like, these PJ sets. Probably, like, my first matching PJs. Like, what was up with, like, the blue and the butterflies?
I don't know, but I definitely had PJ pants from Delia's for sure. I don't remember what they looked like, but I had a pair.
Oh, goodness. The skirt with, like, the frayed, the denim skirt, but dyed with the front pockets.
The one stripe across your boob. This is a quintessential late 90s look. And I think in the Dolls Kill line, they have the rainbow stripe.
They do, yes.
Across your boob. That was like such a, and it was from the 70s, like 70s skater wear. But it's such an icon, like for me, that is quintessential late 90s.
Okay, I would still buy this Roxy bathing suit because
yeah.
I love the cut of these boy shorts. But I remember this like blue window pane, like a light blue and a royal blue. And then it came in different cuts. Like, oh, do you want... You can mix and match. You can have, like, the boy shorts, and you can have the racer back, or you can have, oh, why did we have swim skirts? God, it's like tennis skirts. I'm like, I'm just going to wear shorts, you guys. Why?
I had the racer short. I want to say I had
See,
shorts.
I would own this one, too. This looks like American Apparel.
Really, really cute.
It's like a dark brown with, like, a mustard trim. It's real 70s Boogie Nights vibes.
Yep.
Oh, and there's some of the makeup that they also sold. So they would sell sort of like a trio of neon colored nail polish. And then, I mean, look, this looks like Rihanna's line. Like this.
It really does.
Purple color looks just like hers.
I draw that logo a lot. Like if I'm doodling, I find myself drawing a variation on the Delia's logo, which is that circle. It's like the flower, the circle in the middle, and like little teardrop petals. But yeah, that's
the choker with your astrological sign.
Yep.
I mean, what's old is new again. I mean, I think it was really smart, obviously, of Dolls Kill to strike up this licensing deal. I mean, look at these. I would buy those clogs right now.
Oh my God.
Because what's old is new again. I feel like I could wear all of this stuff right now and be very in style.
Very in style. The bags, not as much.
Oh, the suspender, the rainbow suspenders and belts.
Yep.
A lot of people had that in my middle school. I mean, look at this maxi skirt with the dragons on it.
Oh,
I don't remember why that was such a trend,
Chinese
but it was.
Chinese dragon print was like
yes,
such
I mean,
a thing for a while.
That
with the brocade fabric dresses,
yes.
too. Yep.
A lot of plaid. Yeah, and then also wearing kind of camisole short dresses.
I think lavender.
Lavender
walks so millennial pink could run.
That's very true.
You heard it first, guys.
Good retrospective. Here. Prediction. And then they also had like kind of more tomboy gear, like this wool vest over a t-shirt and baggy jeans, or even these like nerdy ass mid-length jean shorts, which should only be reserved for Laura Dern in Jurassic Park, and they should be khaki.
Yeah,
I mean, truly.
High-waisted,
and then some
yeah.
of these 70s inspired bomber jackets were always very interesting to me. I always
yeah.
kind of wanted one, but I knew I'd never use it.
The military inspiration is there for sure too. A lot of like army like long baggy army green pant with like a lot of neutral khaki. that was, I think, the beginning of the military inspiration that was really big for a while. And Delia's definitely had a lot of that in there.
I'm going to dive into Alloy, but it's going to be a very shallow dive because there's not a ton of info. They started online in January of 1996 and then added a catalog a few months later. They are founded by James K. Johnson and Matthew Diamond as a holding company for Alloy, a teen-oriented magazine and website. By the time the company went public in May of 1999, the website had already earned $15 million in monthly revenues and had 1.3 million registered users. In January of 2000, they purchased a book publisher, 17th Street Productions, renaming it Alloy Entertainment, sort of encompass sort of like a digital arm because they also, as I said, they are a title holding company. They spun off and did production stuff. More contemporarily, they were involved in that YouTube, annoying YouTube channel Smosh. So they weren't just clothes. They were just a multi-conglomerate. But to just talk about the clothes, Alloy, not to be confused with Alloy Apparel, which was a much more mature women's catalog, which I once disappointingly received in the mail because I thought I had ordered an Alloy catalog. It was much more streetwear clothes. They also predominantly featured boys as well. Shit ton of bucket hats. So many bucket hats. It was much more sporty. I'd say they had like much more like loose skater, baseball snowboard. Tees. Yeah, a lot of baggy jeans. Their demos seemed to be almost like a pre-Anchor Blue Miller's Outpost. And although they had similar sort of lifestyle photography as Delia's, it was much more traditional in catalog feel otherwise. It did always kind of feel a little bit like a knockoff. But when Alloy bought Delia's in 2001, their circulation was 55 to 60 million versus Delia's 35. So I guess they had outlasted. I know that Alloy also was better known for branching out into having more size diversity than, say, like a Delia's, which kind of really catered to a more petite or model-sized women's line. But really, that's all I know about Alloy. I think they're still active today, but they're like a tall girl brand.
Interesting.
And that's all I got.
Ah. Well, I think the one last brand that we're really going to deep dive into to bring it back to the brick and mortar is going to be Claire's, just because that's such a staple of the back to school look. And just kind of one of the first stores, I don't know about you, but for me, it was one of the first stores I remember spending, like going in and spending my own money and not having like a parent purchase something. And even if it was like an allowance that was given to me via my parents.
Right.
It was me making that decision to buy that pair of earrings.
Well, I definitely got my ears pierced at Claire's first time. And I recently got my ears re-pierced. And when I went to like a professional tattoo piercing place, the guy was like, "Where'd you go, Claire's?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Oh, I can tell because they did a terrible job."
Yeah.
He's like, "They're not symmetrical."
No, you can see on mine.
He had to re-pierce them. So it's actually very confusing now to put in earrings. I'm like, oh no, not that one. The other hole.
I thought about doing that because...
That's what she said. Okay, I'm done.
This one is so much more droopy than the other. Like, whichever 19-year-old in 1997 pierced my ears, like, one's perfect. And then the other one...
Or checked out high schooler, pierced your ears with a piercing gun.
Yeah, yeah. And I got my first holes there. I got my second holes, which are in terrible shape. And then... very badly, don't ever do this. I got a cartilage piercing done there when I was 16.
Oh, no.
I know. Luckily, and, like, I've been to piercing places where I've gotten other cartilage piercings done with a needle, and they've been like, yeah, you shouldn't have done that, but it looks fine. It healed properly. You're fine. But, yeah, I mean, is there anything more iconic or, like, such a hallmark of being a girl? If you didn't come from a culture where you got your ears pierced as a baby, like... going and getting your ears pierced at Claire's was such a, like,
rite of passage, even if it's your second, third. Everybody I know got their fucking ears pierced at Claire's point.
Totally. So Claire's was formerly known as Claire's Accessories. Originally in the 60s, they were founded as a wig company known as Fashion Tress Industries. It was the largest wig retailer for fashion wigs.
In what year?
And this is in 1961. They were originally just a wig store, and they weren't known as Claire's. They got the name because Roland Schaefer, the guy who owned the wig stores, or the wig company, acquired a small chain of hat stores called Claire's in the early 70s and switched them over to this idea of just selling accessories. And in the late 70s, started piercing ears in 1978. And so over the course of the 80s and 90s, the Claire's chain started getting bigger and bigger. In the meantime, he started acquiring all of these other budget accessory chains. So we're looking at, like, there was one called Topkapi in Japan that he acquired in the 80s. Bow Bangles in the UK in the early 90s. He acquired the Icing in 1995.
Yeah, because I remember they were also called Icing stores at one point.
So the Icing is the only one of the chain of stores that he acquired that retained its original name.
Oh,
and that was to differentiate it by market. So Claire's very much catered to young girls and tweens and early teens, whereas the Icing was supposed to be like a young woman, like in her 20s. Which,
got it.
Honestly, I shopped at the Icing.
Me too.
Yeah, in high school.
I did not get that differentiation.
No, likewise.
I was like, all of this is for me, all this cheap costume jewelry. Great, perfect.
Perfect. And that was, and the other one that I remembered was called Afterthoughts in 1999, which had over 700 stores. But I really liked Afterthoughts because I had, like, they sold a lot of alien stuff, and that was, like, you know, late 90s. Again, Billie Eilish would totally wear a bunch of this shit. So over time, Claire's grew to having, at one point, that over time, their stores were in 96% of all U.S. shopping malls, which makes sense. Like, where, and no matter what the budget of the mall, you know, when by that I mean, like, the tier of customer that they're catering to. So it's a discount, more discount store mall, mid-level mall, expensive mall. I feel like a Claire's was, like, always a staple.
Yes.
For sure.
Hard agree.
And at one point, they had over 3,400 stores in the world in 36 countries. And so in 2002, after their dad, Roland Schaefer, had a stroke, his daughters, Bonnie and Marla Schaefer, took over as co-CEOs. They were doing so well that in the late, around 1996, they were reporting earnings of $345 million.
Holy shit.
And that's before they had finished all the acquisitions that they made. So in 2005, after the sisters have taken over, the company made its initial public offering to on the NASDAQ. They did that year in 2005, $1.3 billion in sales, which makes sense. I mean, this was like, there's such a huge chain. And just 2 years later, it was sold to Apollo Global, which is a private equity firm, for $3.1 billion in a leveraged buyout, which means that the firm that bought them had to borrow money in order to buy them.
I see.
Shout out to this piece that was in Lenny, which no longer exists. I didn't always like Lenny, but this was actually a really good piece on the history of Claire's that was really helpful for this piece, for my section on Claire's. So like I said, at its high point, their stores were in 96% of all U.S. shopping malls. And Claire has done more ear piercings than any other retailer, over 90 million in over 30 years.
That's crazy.
I know.
That's too many ears.
In 2017 alone, they pierced ears 3.5 million times.
What?
Yes. Well, it makes sense. I mean, like, other than Piercing Pagoda and then Limited 2 went out of business or went over to Justice, where I don't think they were doing ear piercing as much anymore. They're, like, the one place. I mean, you go to a doctor's or, like, a jewelry store, I guess, and maybe a tattoo.
Yeah, where else would you go?
But, you know, if you have a daughter, chances are they're going to Claire's.
Yeah, and if you're a parent, you don't want to be driving around all day trying to find some reputable place. You're like, great, Claire's, fine, let's go. Get in there.
Exactly.
Shoot her ears up.
Let me trust this 18-year-old with my poor daughter.
You got this? You got this? Great.
You got this? Great. Good luck on the SAT next week.
Oh, my God. My stepmom took me with my stepbrother. My dad wanted no part of it.
Oh, God. So its decline, unfortunately, has happened in the last decade or 15 years.
I feel like I've been seeing a lot of, I mean, in addition to, you know, the one last blockbuster on Earth, I've seen a lot of, you know, last Claire's on Earth pieces.
Right, and there, a lot of the stores do exist still, but obviously there was a huge decline. Part of it has to do with the company's failure to embrace digital. They
are they not online?
Well, they weren't. They didn't launch e-commerce until 2011 North America, and then 2 years later in Europe, which, like, missed it big time.
Oh, that's rough stuff. They could have been
huge.
They could just go full-blown e-commerce if they had timed that better.
I mean, exactly. And, like, of course, meanwhile, Amazon, you can buy anything from China that looks like something you'd buy from Claire's.
And, I mean, even Etsy, if you want to step up and feel better about yourself.
Exactly. The other thing is that, so in 2018, they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. They were $1.9 billion in debt at that point.
Yikes! What?
Yeah.
How? Do you mean bad investments?
Yeah, it was bad investments. I mean, they acquired so many chains, and so it worked for the first couple of years. But imagine this. Like, this is the time when shopping malls are closing. People are not going to malls anymore.
Right.
And even if their square footage is certainly...
Mall apocalypse.
Their square footage is only about 900 square feet per store.
Yeah.
Which is much smaller than most mall offerings. But they were in so many, they saturated the market. They were in every single mall. They're only so, if, you know, 13-year-olds aren't going to the mall anymore. Like,
how does Starbucks do it then?
Well, Starbucks, I mean, they're outdoors. That's the, there it is. Like, maybe a mall Starbucks does fine.
I can't tell you how bummed I was when I went to Westfield in San Francisco thinking that there was still a Sanrio store there, and there wasn't.
Oh, no.
It closed a long time ago. I had to ask several employees. It was very embarrassing.
Do you know Hello Kitty's first, the first time she was ever sold in the United States was in San Jose?
I think I probably did know that because I went to the Hello Kitty con, and they had the museum exhibit attached to it. And okay. So I walked through an entire history. So I know that they started licensing out their image of Hello Kitty in, like, 1979, and that's how it sort of broke through to an American market. But that's a different podcast.
That's a different podcast. But essentially, of course, Forever 21, H&M, while Claire's was a holdout on e-commerce for so long, H&M and Forever 21 were very into e-commerce in the mid to late 2000s and were heavy on that.
I mean, that's how they squashed Delia's, essentially.
Exactly. And their supply chain. That's the biggest thing you have to note with all of those fast fashion companies is their supply chain. They are getting smaller quantities of certain products, but they're shipping things out on a weekly basis. You're getting new stuff in the store, whereas a Delia's or a Claire's or any of the Unlimited 2 had collections. Mm-hmm. It was not a every week we've got, you know, 10, 15 new items coming into the store. Yeah. This is going to be limited quantities. And you go to a Forever 21, you can do all your shopping in one place. Whereas a Claire's, which offers
accessories.
Of the same market, you can only do accessories. And it makes sense. And it's unfortunate. But, you know, I think it's the same story as Delia's, limited to a lot of these other stores where they just, the square footage didn't match up to what, you know, people are doing in terms of foot traffic. And if I can get the same thing at another store for the same price point and also do my shopping in other ways, I'm going to kill two birds with one stone.
Of course. That's why a Target is so popular for back to school shopping.
Yeah. But I feel like one of the final things I want to note about Claire's is I feel like the rite of passage of shoplifting was often, Claire's was often the focal point of that one. I was a
sometimes a Rite Aid.
I was a goody two shoes. I think I shoplifted from there once intentionally, and the other time I did it unintentionally. I had a pair of earrings that were stuck to my coat hood, and then later caught out of the store and was like, "Oh shit!" And then like was too embarrassed to go back. So, but yeah, I didn't dabble into shoplifting as much as other people. Most of my friends really. That's really my rite of passage at Claire's.
I stole lip gloss from Rite Aid once. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. I never stole from Claire's because I was like, it's so cheap. Why would you steal it?
I don't know.
I know when the Mervyn's in the Burbank Mall closed, a lot of people I knew shoplifted like fucking crazy there. They stole so much stuff because Mervyn's was also like a one-stop shop, but they also had like books. And so just got the most random Christmas gifts for like 2 years from a select few high school friends. I was like, is this shoplifted from Mervyn's? Like, yeah.
We didn't have
you know it.
We didn't have Mervyn's on the East Coast. Our department store chain that I think is probably comparable. Mervyn's was a department store. Yeah. Right? I think the one that's comparable to like where I grew up in the Mid-Atlantic area was Hex, and that was then acquired by Macy's.
Oh.
So they turned them all into Macy's, which isn't doing well either because I think they did a lot of acquisitions of regional chains. And
they did, yeah. As evidenced by the multitude of brands that they rep that don't make sense.
No, I mean, it's definitely too much of a range. Like, I think Nordstrom was smart in keeping its range in terms of price point. And, you know, you go to Nordstrom.
And having a very forgiving return policy.
The best return policy. Nordstrom and Costco, because L.L. Bean doesn't have it anymore.
Oh, Lord. I mean, let's not even get me started on the L.L. Bean Ford Explorers that were so big in the 90s. Again, a different podcast episode.
Indeed.
Is that all you have for back-to-school staples / mall stores that are defunct?
Just a couple. We talked about Girlfriends LA for about 2 seconds. I really wish I could find more information on that. I spent, like, 2 hours looking yesterday. Sadly, really, only a couple of, like, personal anecdotes. There was one woman who has a blog called Tutus and Tiaras. She's a plus-size blogger. She was talking about how this brand was really big on plus sizes, kind of like you were saying with, I think, Alloy was big on that,
yes,
too. She was saying that at its peak, Girlfriends LA was carrying up to a junior's 25 and a 3XL. And for her, as a teenager, this was a place where she could shop, whereas, like, Delia's and some of the other catalogs did not carry that level of sizing. The other thing that I noticed in Girlfriends LA was that they did a lot of promotion with movies, so they had a big Josie and the Pussycats collection.
Oh, right.
Right. So the sample catalog that I kept seeing all over the internet was from that that kind of season.
That makes sense.
And one of the models that I recognized immediately was Amber Stevens, who was on Greek, which I believe was published full circle by Alloy in the beginning when Alloy was still doing TV.
Oh, and I wouldn't be surprised.
And she's now on Happy Together on CBS, which I have not watched. But I do like that Refinery 29 referred to the clientele of this store or this catalog as mall bred punks, because it's true. I mean, you look back and it was definitely a more punk rockabilly chick style, rebel girl chick style of Delia's, where it was very like leopard print, faux leather, pink snake skin.
I think Girlfriends LA was definitely more of a contemporary to Delia's than, say, like a Limited 2.
No, absolutely.
So I think that you went to Girlfriends LA and Delia's when you started to outgrow Limited 2,
yep,
but you didn't feel ready for an Urban Outfitters.
I think this was kind of a very, like, this, some of this stuff could have been sold at Hot Topic.
Yes.
So that's
some,
not all, for sure. That's all I really had. Just Nikki was the other one that Claire's owned. So Claire's owned a catalog, retail.
Well, Just Nikki was very notable because its very first catalog had Britney Spears on the cover.
Right, and
like,
this is
Fresh Face Mickey Mouse Club, Britney.
Right, and this is right before Baby One More Time had been released. So I think it was part of her, you know, initial
promo cycle. I mean, they had weird partnerships for her during that promo cycle.
They really did. The other thing worth noting is that this article I read in the South Florida Sun Sentinel referred to Just Nikki having a happy face on the end of it. It has like a happy...
Oh, yeah, it has a happy face emoticon.
Emoticon, because it's not an emoji. And it's the...
Yeah, quote, Emily, it's the 90s.
It's the 90s. They refer to it as, quote, the 90s version of the 1970s smiley face.
Okay.
Whatever. And so that's pretty much it. The eerie quote from this, though, that was a foreshadowing of why they lasted about 2 years, was, quote, though the smiley face comes from internet email, Just Nikki isn't banking on internet sales just yet. The internet site is so far is for feedback and ordering catalogs. Claire's isn't in a rush to start selling over the internet because it's still too slow and unwieldy, Doyle, the head of Just Nikki, said. Quote, I don't think the internet is there yet. A sad foreshadowing.
That's what happens when you don't trust and believe in Al Gore's internet.
Indeed.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this very special episode of Going Back to School. Two back-to-back very special episodes I guess not back-to-back because it was two episodes ago that we did Teen Soaps, but a very special episode nonetheless.
Super special.
Please follow us on Instagram if you want a dose of nostalgia. We're at Old Millennials Pod. We'll probably have a couple pages of Adelia's magazine and some Limited 2 looks up on the Instagram.
We also now have a Facebook page as of a day ago. We are at facebook.com/TheOldMillennialsPod. If you want to find us there, we'll be doing some cross-posting. But if you just want to quickly have a link to each episode, you'll be able to find that there very nicely. So come and like us on Facebook.
And if you don't want to deal with Facebook because you think Mark Zuckerberg is evil, which honestly, very fair.
That's all right.
You can just subscribe to this wherever you get your podcast, whether it be on Spotify or iTunes, which will become Apple Music or something soon.
Yeah.
And we're also on SoundCloud. You can find us there, and you can also rate and review us. That helps other people find us, or just tell somebody about this podcast if you enjoyed it so much.
Individually, you can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Emily A. Bajan.
And I'm at Marg, she wrote.
Until next time.
Make it to class, because you're late. Bye.
Bye.